Food News.
Yeah, Monica is with us from doing Dubai. I've had my wrist slapped. I got the wrong cuisine, didn't I? I said Portuguese.
We both begin with a P,
begin with a P, you're right. But Monica today is talking about cuisine that comes from a land that not only has a bit of the Amazon rainforest in it, It's also got Machu Picchu. But
yes,
you've just
has.
Pointed out, Monica, it's home to Lake
Titicaca,
which is gorgeous.
Yes. Yeah, so it's got a lot going for it nature-wise and apparently cuisine-wise as well. So we're talking about a couple of restaurants that I reviewed, actually, two of the same type of cuisine restaurants in the same week, in the same place in Dubai. So if you had two upmarket restaurants, both based in DIFC, and we're talking DIFC proper, so that's, as we know, Gate Village, you know, how do you choose between them? Which one would you go to? So I thought we'd kind of talk to our listeners about that. How many, out of interest, Peruvian restaurants can you name in Dubai? I think there's one very well-known one.
Koya.
Absolutely, yeah, that's the one that skips off the
tongue. That's the only one I know.
That's the only one you know. Okay, mm-hmm. Any others?
That's the only one I've been to, but okay. I do know of two in DIFC, but that's it. So three in total.
So there's also one called Pollo Pollo, which is spelt P-O-L-L-O, P-O-L-L-O, which is a chicken-oriented Peruvian restaurant. There's one called Ceviche, which is in DIFC, but not in Gate Village. I think it's in the building next to our Emirates Financial Towers.
Mm-hmm.
The two that we're going to talk about, I've spoken about one, Mark, I can't believe you don't remember, called Inca. Do you remember on the 31st
it's
floor?
It's all coming back to me now.
Now it is. Now I've mentioned it. Yes, you remember. Of course you do.
Yes.
On the 31st floor of the Sofitel Hotel. So there are a sort of, you know, I'd say there are a growing handful of Peruvian restaurants in Dubai.
But before we get into the two restaurants that you're going to be reviewing today, Monica, we've got to ask the question, what is behind this trend? Why are there so many Peruvian restaurants in Dubai?
There was a festival, actually, I think, about a year ago, wasn't there? A Peruvian food festival here.
Okay.
So I didn't
go to that, but yeah, possibly. How many Peruvians do you think there are in Dubai? Because that could be a factor as to why you'd have more Peruvian restaurants. Precisely 400 or so of them. So no, that's not a factor. 22 of which work at Totora, which is one of the restaurants that we're going to talk about. I think it might be something about the cuisine that perhaps the Ministry of Tourism maybe thinks could be a good way of boosting up the profile of a country, because we all know sort of culinary, you know, if there's not a crime scene that's set in a country, then maybe the food is the next best thing.
Mm-hmm.
So what they need to do is to set a really, really good crime scene in Peru, combine it with this push that they've got in cuisine, and then everybody's going to just be going to Peru, plus a direct Emirates flight, then hey, they've done their job.
Oh, yes.
So. Somebody's texting, Karen, Garden in Marriott Marquis, awesome place serving Peruvian food.
Okay, so there you are. So there's another one.
Yeah,
absolutely. So there are a few of them. Soon to be 17 of them within the next 18 months.
17?
17 more Peruvian restaurants. So if you do go to one, you need to know what you're going to eat. So the first one we're talking about is this one called Totora. Now, Totora is apparently a type of reed, a very versatile reed that you can use to make boats with, and it's a sort of traditional material that they've used. So they've taken this as the name of the restaurant. This isn't an import; it's not a branch from Peru or anywhere else in the world. So I like that about it. It's a homegrown restaurant. They've come up with this. 22 Peruvians actually working here, mostly in the kitchen. So that's very, very reassuring. So I like that about it. It is open for lunch and it's open for dinner. It doesn't have an alcohol license as yet. And it's probably, I'd say, slightly lower key simply because it is Ramadan. So they're not, you know, sort of going the whole kind of hog with everything. But we sampled a very, very nice lunch there. And one of the main things that you would get is ceviche. Either of you know what ceviche is, or ceviche.
I have not tried it because I think it's to do with raw fish.
Correct. Mark?
Seaweed?
No, it's raw fish. And again, Mark, you're telling me that, you know, I just come once every 2 weeks. Do you remember Steph once said, oh, she's ceviched everything?
You've got an amazing
she
memory.
She does this. So she puts masses of lime on something and then suddenly some raw fish and suddenly it becomes ceviched. So it's basically, they marinate their raw fish, you're quite right, Zara, in something called leche de tigre, which is sort of tiger milk. And it's very, very, nothing to do with milk, a very, very spicy combination of sort of lime and chili, chilies, and things like that. And that sort of cures the fish, so there isn't really any need to eat it. But they've got a very, very distinct varieties of different sorts of ceviche.
I want to just play devil's advocate here and just ask, how difficult is this technique and why is it that everyone talks about, oh, you've got to go here because it's got the best ceviche. No, you've got to go here. It's got the best. How difficult is it to actually do this technique?
I think in terms of the length of time that it takes and what you're actually doing, it's probably quite simple because all you're doing is you... But what's important are two things. One is the ingredients. So it's how fresh is your fish and where's it from.
True.
I think some of the fish that we had, especially when it's raw fish, at Totoro was direct from Japan. And secondly, it's the skill with which the chef actually combines the ingredients to make the marinade, the leche de tigres, and that makes a big, big difference. So the ones we had at Totoro, absolutely excellent. We had two varieties. We had a classic one. You should always try a classic one called Puro. And then you can also have, Zara and I were talking about this before, we had one called the Nikkei one. So do you know what Nikkei cuisine is? I bet you won't remember,
I'm staying
Mark.
Out of this one. I'm staying.
I'm not getting anything right. Nikkei.
It's nothing to do with training
Japanese.
Shoes.
Japanese.
No.
Japanese.
You're on the right line, Zara. So Nikkei cuisine is actually a combination of Japanese Peruvian cuisine. So it's sort of Peruvian cuisine with a heavy Japanese twist to it. Because Peru, I think, was one of the first countries that welcomed lots of Japanese people sort of in 19-something or the other.
After the war, no?
After the war.
Yeah.
And they even had a Japanese prime minister, was it Fujimori? And then he was ousted and then he was back being prime minister. So there's a big Japanese influence to the food.
Yeah.
And I think this has kind of done Peruvian food great favours. And that may be in part, I believe, why it's becoming so popular again here, because straight Japanese, very different, maybe straight Peruvian, but this kind of blend of both of them together.
Does it work?
I think works very, very well for me, and I think they should do more of the fusion of the Nikkei type food. It works very well and very successful in London as well. There's a restaurant called Chotomate, which one of my favourite restaurants, opened about 2, maybe 3 years ago in London, in Soho. Precisely, the whole restaurant is on this, doing very, very well.
We're intrigued by fusion food, aren't we, Monica? I mean, I'm going to a Peruvian Japanese-styled restaurant in Barcelona next month, and I think you wanted to talk about it because it's very famous.
Well, it's precisely the kind of cuisine we were talking about. So if people from El Bui, the Ed Ferran Nedria and his brother, are opening a Nikkei restaurant, then it's got to be worth something. And the one I think you're talking about, Zara, is called Pakta.
Yes.
So they opened that, I think, about a year ago. So I'm desperately keen to hear about what that's like. But if you can't get there, you can go to Totoro and have lots of really interesting ceviche. And we had some of the maki rolls as well. Now, I mean, one of the things that comes up to me is they were very, very at pains to say this is authentic Peruvian food. This is the real deal. This is absolutely, you know, classic Peruvian food, apart from the little sort of accent of Nikkei on it. And that's fine. But sometimes I think you have to get people accustomed to the palate of what really is Peruvian, and they may not like it as much. So when I think of Japanese maki rolls, I sort of want them to be kind of a little bit spicy, quite fresh. I can't remember which ones we had, but they were a little bit too sweet for me, and that didn't sit very well for me. The rice was a bit too densely packed.
Yeah.
So that sort of wasn't necessarily kind of the best dish for me to have on that menu.
Alex has sent a text in saying Nikkei literally means second generation.
Ah.
The second generation Japanese in Peru.
Okay, well,
influenced this cuisine.
So that's a very good name. They've named that very, very well. I wonder what the equivalent would be for sort of, I don't know, second generation Indians in Dubai or something.
What's the restaurant look like?
The restaurant is actually a design lover's dream. You know, there's a book called The Design Hotels. So if there was a book called Design Restaurants, I think this Totoro would kind of definitely be in it. Lots of beautiful turquoise blues and golds going on in very modern contemporary upholstery, pink vases full of white freesias. When you walk in, there's almost like a mini Golden Gate Bridge effect that you walk past, and you don't realise you're walking across a Golden Gate Bridge until you're sitting on the other side of it, and you think, gosh, that looks a bit like a copper Golden Gate Bridge. Very loungy as well downstairs, sort of dining on the upstairs. So very, very beautifully designed restaurant. As I said, we went for lunch. They had blinds down, but it was still very, very bright. So I think it would be very, very good in the daytime as well as in the evening in the lounge aspect.
In terms of affordability?
I'd say it was mid-range, but it really does depend on what you order as well. So the ceviches, as we were talking about, for kind of entry level are like sort of 50 dirhams, 60 dirhams, something like that. We had another traditional thing is the skewers. So food on skewers, they were very plump prawns on skewers, and I think they were sort of 95, three of those with some sides of asparagus, 35. So I think that if you choose properly, then I think it's completely affordable to go and try.
But before we go to the break, Monica, there's a big question that you want to ask the listeners, and that is to do with authenticity. Do you want that when you go to a restaurant?
Exactly. I mean, take Japanese restaurants or Chinese restaurants. You know, we're all talking about that trip to China, and everyone said, oh, but you won't like the food. Well, why not? Because it's too authentic. It's too Chinese, and it won't be Chinese food that you're used to. So I don't know. I think there is a little bit of, obviously, a restaurant opens to satisfy its stakeholders who are the investors. And the investors are satisfied if they get money back, and they're going to get money back if they have customers. If the customers are liking what they're eating, then that's great. And the more authentic or whatever it is the customers want, the better. If they don't, then I think it's always useful to be a little bit adaptable and a little bit less true to your roots and say, okay, we're going to change this a little bit because people prefer this as opposed to that. And they're going to have a full restaurant.